And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
And welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday afternoon, helping to get you over the hump and towards the weekend. With plenty to do over the next couple of hours. Coming up, last night's All-Star Game. What it means for baseball and what it should mean for the National League. Plus, apparently, we didn't all learn our lesson from the movie A Bronx Tale. We'll do that later on. Team USA finally got a win. Also, who are the top quarterbacks in the NFL? Do we have a new sack leader in NFL history, even without games being played? And we'll check in on Clemson and South Carolina's recruiting. And can Clemson sustain this run they've been on moving forward? We'll also talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling in just a little bit. And former Atlanta Brave Greg McMichael, who won a World Series with the Braves and still works for the organization, will join us an hour from now as we get ready for the second half of the Braves season. All that and more over the next couple of hours, plus got some tickets to give away to the River Dogs game this weekend. And you can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, this week's camel ride is going quite well. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. Well, it was quite the interesting morning. I got a notification on my iPhone that my passwords were part of a data leak. So that was great. 81 accounts. I was sitting there. I had to change passwords. I'm changing passwords for 81 accounts. I don't even know what half these accounts are that I have with this password or these passwords. So that was nice. But at least, thank goodness for the technology that my iPhone let me know. Somehow. So I'm sitting there changing all these passwords. What a world. I saw on the website, pwned.com, 11.4 billion accounts just on their website alone have been breached. Ah, so that was fun. That was a fun start. Let me start with this. The All-Star game last night in Major League Baseball. The AL came away victorious again. I got a few thoughts about this. We'll get to the actual outcome of the game and what it means in just a moment. Now, Shohei Ohtani was the big star last night. I still think that the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game are big events for Major League Baseball because that's their showcase. That's their opportunity to show what they have in the sport to either casual fans or, you know, fans that aren't so into baseball but they like watching the All-Star Game. There's nothing else on TV, and you can see what the sport has. And we saw that last night with the MVP, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., youngest player to win the MVP of the All-Star Game, youngest player to homer, I believe, in the All-Star Game as well. And he's an incredible talent. You got to see some of the young talent. You got to see Shohei Ohtani, who was the big star that they wanted to show off throughout last night's event. But the other problem for Major League Baseball is really the lack of household names. And it's not necessarily just baseball's fault. I think they could do a better job promoting their product. But also, when you look at the game last night, in fact, there was an awkward moment where Freddie Freeman was mic'd up. And I know, right? I'm sure Bobby's going to complain later today about the players being mic'd up in the broadcast. To me, I actually enjoy that. It's an exhibition game. It doesn't matter. Let's get a little insight instead of just hearing Joe Buck and John Smoltz talk for 3 hours about a meaningless game. All right, let's hear some of the players. Now, some of it's a little awkward. Some of it's a little cringy. It's a little weird. But I like the general idea of having the players mic'd up and getting that inside access. I think that's always great, anytime you can do that. But there was an awkward moment where Freddie Freeman was asked, you know, he was coming up to bat. Kyle Gibson was warming up in the bullpen for the AL. And they told Freddie Freeman, this is who you're going to be facing next inning. Or it looks like this is who you're going to be facing. And Freeman had to pause, and he thought about it for a moment, and he said, oh, Texas Rangers, right? And they said, yeah. But the fact that Freddie Freeman, and yes, they're in different leagues, and the Rangers and Braves don't play one another, but with free agency and with the connections nowadays, you know, these players all know each other. And the fact that Freddie Freeman had to sit there and think about, like, who, Kyle Gibson? That's who I'm facing? Who's he? Is he the guy in the Rangers? You don't know another player in the league. And so it's hard to fault the fans at home that may be watching these games, either the All-Star game last night or a random baseball game in May on a Tuesday, and try to get interested and get in front of the TV to go watch Teoscar Hernandez of the Toronto Blue Jays, who we saw last night, or Mike Zunino or Cedric Mullins or some of these other guys that even your average baseball fan probably has no idea who they are. What does this guy play for? Oh, he's having a pretty good year. And these guys are deserving of the All-Star game. That's not to take anything away from them. Like, hey, sorry, you're not a big enough name. You can't go to the game. If you look at the numbers, right, these guys are having good years. But it's just the fact of the matter that there's very few names in baseball that are household names that will get you to a TV that you want to watch. Last night it was Ohtani and Fernando Tatis, and we got, what, one matchup of that? And then it's like, all right, well let's see. What, is Dancing with the Stars on now? What else can we watch? Major League Baseball has a problem with the stars in the sport, that they're not as big as they probably should be. And that's why the All-Star game, the Home Run Derby, is important to try to get those stars out in front of the sports viewing public. Now, in baseball's defense, once again, let me come to the defense of Rob Manfred here, because a lot of the big-time stars didn't show up last night. Jacob DeGrom is the pitcher outside of Ohtani. DeGrom's probably the other pitcher you want to see the most on the mound. He wasn't there. None of the Astro players showed up. Right, a few other guys. Like, we didn't get Mookie Betts wasn't involved in the game. Mike Trout was injured. Right, you're missing quite a few players. And so I thought about this. If I were to do a list of the players you have to see in baseball, my top five would be Ohtani, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Jacob DeGrom, Ronald Acuna, Fernando Tatis Jr. Those would be my top five of the top five players you have to see in baseball this year. Like, currently, if you're going to watch a baseball game, you want to watch one of those guys. We got three of the five in the All-Star game last night, so not bad. But if I were to extend it a little bit further, I would include Mookie Betts and Aaron Judge and Mike Trout and Juan Soto, and we got only half of those nine. We got five out of those nine guys in the game last night. Right? You're missing some of the stars, whether it's because of injuries or they opted out. That doesn't help baseball either. But ESPN did a ranking a year ago, and ESPN tried to find the most famous athletes. Top 100 most famous athletes. And you know where the first baseball player slotted in? All the way at number 99. 99th most well-known, popular, famous, however you want to phrase it, most well-known athlete. The first baseball player was 99 on the list. Behind esports. Behind kids who play video games. They're more popular than the baseball players. And that's a problem for Major League Baseball, which makes these last two events, the last two nights, very important to try to showcase, theoretically, some of the best talent you have in the sport, led by Shohei Ohtani last night. And I don't know if baseball did a good enough job, or I don't know if that was a good enough all-star cast to get the point across. But we know baseball needs to do a better job of showcasing their athletes, and that's why an event like that last night is most important. That's why I think you should mic up the players. Take the fans behind the curtain. Let them get to know these guys a little bit. Right? They got good person. Freddie Freeman is great, especially on social media with his kid. His kid was in the dugout hugging Fernando Tatis Jr. Right? He's a great guy, Freddie Freeman. Always does great things for the fans. Showcase them a little more. Now, the game itself. What does the outcome of last night's game mean? It doesn't count towards home field advantage. Just an exhibition game. What does it matter? Well, I think it's interesting. I think the All-Star games do tell us something. The AL have won 8 straight now. In fact, the AL has beaten the National League in 20 of the last 23 All-Star games. The AL has been dominant. Remember, there was a time when this was reverse, when the NL won 11 straight. The NL won every All-Star game from 1972 to 1982. And it was such a big deal at the time that the two leagues did not like one another, and the NL was much better than the AL. And Pete Rose has said that the NL, they were better because they had more athletes. Actually, the direct quote from Pete Rose, as he put it, is that the NL has more brothers. That's what he said at the time. Pete Rose's words. The other famous line from Pete Rose when picking up chicks was he would tell women, you haven't had anyone till you had a National Leaguer. It was a big deal to play in the National League. Then things have changed over the years, and free agency came around, and players are switching teams all the time, and in the interleague play, they're playing every night anyways. But back then, it was really two separate leagues. They wanted to beat each other, and it was a competition. Right? If you were an NL guy, you wanted to stay an NL guy. If you were an AL guy, you'd stay in the AL. Even when free agency first came around, then the money became so great, they said, who cares? I don't care if I'm going to go. I'm going to make millions. That team's offering me more. I'll go play over there. Right? But back in the day, there was a real rivalry. And then ever since, it's not quite as strong. Players move around. I get that. But why does the AL, why do they now dominate the Midsummer Classic? And it's not just that. Because the AL has fared better, not only in the All-Star games, but also Interleague. The five teams with the best winning percentage in Interleague play all time are AL teams. The AL has won more Interleague games against the National League. When it comes to World Series, guess what? The American League has won more World Series than the National League all time. But also, if you want to break that down to the last 20 years, last 25 years, last 35 years, last 45 years, you give me whatever year you want to set the parameters at. Whatever year you want me to go back and start the data from, and I'll let you know that the AL has more World Series. They have always controlled the World Series, and especially since the DH was introduced. Not only that, this year in baseball, there are 16 teams right now in Major League Baseball with a winning record. 10 of the 16 are AL teams. And of the NL teams with a winning record, half of them are in the NL West. Outside of the NL West, the NL is pretty poor. The AL always puts up better numbers offensively because they have an extra hitter. And oddly enough, also pitching historically has been better ERA-wise in the AL, which then tells you, how do they score more runs with a lower ERA? Well, the defense isn't as good in the AL for whatever reason. But the AL has controlled the National League in these All-Star games, in World Series, in Interleague play, anytime they go head-to-head. Why is that important? Why should we make a mountain out of a molehill that is an All-Star game? You're probably thinking, oh, who cares? Right? It was an exhibition. It was fun. Not even all the best players were there. Who cares that the AL won last night? Well, they've won 8 in a row. They've won 20 out of 23. They're winning the majority of the World Series. They're winning the majority of the Interleague games. When those two leagues get matched up, I know the NL, they won the Dodgers, won the World Series last year, but for years could never get over that hump. The AL has been in control. And I'm somebody who has been a proponent of the league-wide designated hitter. And I think the data backs it up as well. Because you tell me why else the AL would have the advantage. Sure, maybe it's just a coincidence, but the AL has dominated the All-Star game for the past 25 years. They have won more World Series during that stretch. They have dominated interleague play since that became a thing 24 years ago. I don't think it's just simply a coincidence that the AL, over the past at least 25 years, has always been beating the NL in every competition. If you were losing every competition to somebody, right, you could go, oh, it's just a string of bad luck. Yeah, sure, you could say that, make yourself feel better. Or you could realize, like, yeah, they're just better than you. They're beating you in everything. And what's the big difference between the AL and the NL? Players come and go. Managers come and go. Right? Teams are willing to pay enough. You got the Mets and the Yankees. You got the two Chicago teams, one in each league. So it's not like the AL has all the big markets. You got California in both the AL and NL. You got the Dodgers spending all tons of money. The Mets as well, they're in the NL. The Cubs have had big payrolls. The Cardinals are willing to spend money every once in a while. Right? They're spending money. They're getting stars. What's the one difference? AL to NL, it's a designated hitter. You have an extra hitter in that lineup. And if you look at the DHs last night, who played DH for the AL? Shohei Ohtani, J.D. Martinez, Nelson Cruz. Martinez was just an MVP a couple years ago. Ohtani probably will be the MVP this year. Nelson Cruz was an MVP candidate. Those are the DHs. Those are the extra hitters you can add to a lineup in the American League. National League teams are not built to handle a DH. They don't have a natural DH on that team. So when they go up against an AL team, you think, well, it's a level playing field. They get a DH. Yeah, but they don't have one on the roster. They're just plugging in some random guy off the bench. So if you're a National League fan, if you're a Braves fan, I'm sure you're old school. You love letting the pitchers bat. But when it comes to going up against the American League, whether it's in an All-Star game where they have more talent to choose from, whether it's an interleague game that count in the standings and you have to go play the AL, whether it's the World Series, the most important matchups, the AL has controlled all three aspects. And I think it is because of the advantage of the designated hitter. You give a team an extra batter in their lineup, yeah, that's going to be an advantage. Coming up, we'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling. He'll join us in a few minutes because he usually joins us around 1 o'clock, but later on we'll be joined by Greg McMichael, former Atlanta Brave. So we'll talk some golf with Jeremy coming up in just a few minutes because we, of course, have the Open Championship coming up. I'll also get back to the All-Star Game a little bit later on because a lot of people were up in arms about the All-Star Game, and they were really missing something that we were all taught from Hollywood 30 years ago. I'll get to that later this afternoon. But when we come back, we'll talk a little golf with Jeremy Schilling. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in a little bit, Team USA got their first win of the exhibition schedule. And we'll circle back to the All-Star Game a little bit later on as well. But we'll talk some golf in just a moment. Usually at this time, it's the natural segue for me to remind you of our summer golf tour, but unfortunately it's all done with. Sold out the foursomes on Monday for the final week of our 2021 Summer Golf Tour. Check back next year. You can head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to get any information you may need. The Open Championship's coming up this weekend, and joining us now is our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, who joins us every Wednesday. You can find him on Twitter at @jschill. He writes for PGA Magazine, and he's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me. And it's good to see Team USA actually play like they should yesterday. It's going to be an interesting road for them. There's a lot of guys who kind of wonder where their head's at going into this after the condensed NBA season and everything. So it'll be an interesting display of basketball coming up in Tokyo starting next week.
Yeah, next Friday. While we're on the subject, before we get into everything going on the tour, in regards to the Olympics, what are we looking at for the field for golfers? I don't even know. I haven't paid attention. Who do we have for golf for the Olympics coming up?
I could not tell you and make that a tease for next week.
Yeah, that makes sense. Next week's when the Olympics starts anyways. So we'll get into it next week.
Or actually, no, it would be the week after. I'll say this. Dustin Johnson was the only U.S. player to opt out. There were a whole bunch of opt-outs from other countries for various purposes, but this field is better than 2016, and whoever wins will be, and I swear by this, they will be a fantastic gold medalist. This is the best Olympic field I think the IOC and the IGF, which is the International Golf Federation, could have ever hoped for. And whether it's Rahm, whether it's Rory, whether it's Victor Hovland, there are some great stories out there. And some countries that have never won a lot of medals in the Summer Olympics could. I mean, think about it. Victor Hovland's the first Norwegian to ever win on the PGA Tour, the European Tour. We usually talk about Norway in the context of the Winter Olympics, not Summer Olympics. So it'll be really fun, and that's the only men's golf event in the world that week, so we'll have a lot to talk about in 2 weeks here on the Morrow Midday Show on Wednesday, ESPN Radio 98.9 FM, Charleston.
Perfect. Looking forward to it. We call that a tease. This time, what, 2 weeks out in advance? That's quite the tease.
Yes.
Lucas Glover won this past week, and before we get to the Open Championship, we had the John Deere Classic this past week. Lucas Glover gets the win. What did you think from this past weekend?
Full disclosure, I was at two weddings.
Ooh.
Saw about 20 minutes combined of weekend play. But when I was at the second wedding, waiting for the food to arrive, took a look at my phone, saw that Lucas had won his first win in a decade. Huge congrats to him. And whenever I look at an event that I haven't been able to see, I always look at the scorecards first, and I try to figure out, okay, what was the common denominator? Remember what I said about John Rahm at the U.S. Open? He had no bogeys in the second nine as everybody else backed up.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas Glover, best back nine of anybody in contention. If you do not make mistakes down the stretch on Sunday, you will win golf tournaments. And in an event that featured a whole bunch of people who had either not won ever, as in Adam Schenck, or not won in a while, as in Sebastian Munoz, you'll get guys going the wrong direction come Sunday, and that's what we face when it came to the John Deere. And ultimately, Lucas wins out, and he was the guy who played consistent, even though it had been a decade. And this is a guy who won the U.S. Open at Bethpage Black, you know, 12 years ago. People forget that. But he has, and now, to quote Bill Belichick, we are on to Royal St. George's.
That's right. These two weddings, were they back-to-back days? Was it like a wedding doubleheader this past weekend?
Two weddings, two different states,
oh my goodness,
20 hours apart.
Ooh, that's a busy weekend. I hope they had different menus for you, so you're not eating like salmon both nights.
No. Different menus, and one was a high school crowd, and one was a college crowd.
Ooh, so, nice.
It was a different group, which was very helpful because seeing the same people two nights in a row have been interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was really good. It was a great time, and these are all pandemic weddings, and I think you could do a whole segment. You and Joe could do a whole segment on quirky schedules in 2021 and 2022,
yeah.
And this is one of them. There's I know a lot of people that have these quirky doubleheaders.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because of the pandemic and all these weddings and other celebrations that had to be moved.
Yeah, and you got to schedule. Everyone's trying to reschedule, so you just got to get yours whenever you can with some of these weddings. These venues are busy now. Talking with Jeremy Schilling.
Exactly.
On Twitter at @JSchill. All right, let's talk about the coming up this weekend, tomorrow, the Open Championship. I know already guys like Bubba Watson, Hideki Matsuyama, Zach Johnson now will not be participating because of COVID-19 stuff. And I guess this is possibly has the makings to be a crazy weekend where the concerns for the COVID-19 disqualifications may go on all weekend long, right?
Yeah, 17 players in total have withdrawn or opted out either because they tested positive, like Zach Johnson, either because they have not recovered yet, like Hideki Matsuyama, to the point where the mRNA, the folks over there who govern golf and who run this event would be satisfied. Or in the case of Bubba Watson, who's a close contact, even though he's fully vaccinated and tested negative, different rules over there. The basic deal with this week is the following. You're allowed four people total. That's it. A lot of people do not have their chefs with them, do not have plus ones. They got just the most important people with them, instructors, caddies, maybe an agent or a manager, somebody to kind of run their PR for them. You can't stay at a house or visit anybody else in anybody else's room. You can't go out to any restaurant or pub. And you really can't go anywhere. You got to kind of go between wherever you're staying and the golf course. And these are rules that came into effect late. These are rules that made a lot of players who stay in houses together at this event start scrambling to find other houses or places to stay. This forced a lot of people to run their accommodations by the RNA to make sure that they were approved, because there is no The threshold to getting pulled off the golf course and disqualified is not that high. And Martin Slumbers, who heads the RNA, said, hey, if somebody makes one step, is this an one step too far in the wrong place? Is this an automatic DQ? And he said, well, I don't want to deal with hypotheticals, but possibly, yes. So these players basically need to go back, forth, back, forth, back, forth, with no ability to really go elsewhere. So it's going to take a lot of discipline for some of these guys who are so used to staying together or visiting people. I mean, Luke, you could be in the room over from your best friend on tour and you can't get in that person's room, because if you blurt it out or if it comes out that you were in that room, you and that player could be disqualified.
Yeah.
So literally, if you need to talk to somebody, who's not in your bubble from that's in a hotel and like you're, you know, two doors down, you need to FaceTime that person.
Yeah, you better pick up the phone and call them. I got two follow-ups to that. The first one being, you mentioned 17 players. So is it these changing rules for the DQs or the players not participating? Or is there some sort of, for lack of a better term, like an outbreak right now on tour with COVID?
No, there's not an outbreak. Very good question. We've had a couple withdrawals that always happen because of babies being born, people who wanted a break, who qualified and passed up the opportunity. For example, Ryan Moore's on his way from a back injury. He got the slot at the John Deere, chose not to fly the charter all the way there because he didn't want the seven-hour flight or whatever it would have been out of Des Moines, to just make sure his body can heal correctly. There's guys who, yes, tested positive, yes, close contact, and there's some that just wanted to avoid the protocols altogether and didn't want to get trapped in the UK for a couple weeks. And then there's two players who withdrew from South Korea, Sungjae Im and Siwoo Kim, who withdrew to prep for the Olympics.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get out of mandatory by winning a medal at the Olympics. So there's guys who are, but no, there is no outbreak in America on the PGA Tour. Let's make that abundantly clear. There is no outbreak here. Have we seen more positives recently? The opposite field event, the Barbasol this week, had Ted Purdy test positive. He withdrew. We have seen an increase in cases like the rest of the country has, but there is no outbreak. These are, it's 17 players. It's a lot, but it's also transcontinental travel and different protocols. If this event was in the U.S., Hideki could have teed it up. Bubba Watson could have teed it up because of the way that those protocols are structured. And some people who are missing because of knick-knack injuries or because a baby might be born would have played because it's easier to get home versus being on the other side of the ocean.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's interesting. And in the process, you answered my second follow-up question about maybe some guys staying away because of these protocols or strict rules for the Open Championship. Talking with Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill. Okay, so for this weekend, why will this be an Open Championship unlike any other when it comes to the TV production?
So for a myriad of reasons, both trying to get the folks who need to get to Tokyo for the Olympics, Dan Hicks, who calls swimming, Tommy Roy, who produces swimming, Terry Gannon, who calls gymnastics. Mike Tirico's not involved in this week at all because he's already over there. To meet their quarantine mandates, they had to stay in the U.S. They would not have been able to go from the U.K. to Tokyo and satisfy it. Also, the RNA asked Golf Channel /NBC to try to limit their footprint. They have gone from 250 people on site to 24 people total on site. 24 people total. This is going to be the world feed that we are seeing for 95% of the coverage, I would say, the entire week. All the on-course reporters and anybody who's doing player interviews are on the ground at Royal St. George's. Jim Bones McKay, John Wood, Nota Begay, Karen Stupples, Todd Lewis, Carol Banks. They're all over there. Everybody else, Dan Hicks, Paul Azinger, Gary Koch, David Faraday, all down the line, the vast majority of them are in this country in Stamford, Connecticut. Tommy Roy is producing this, calls this the biggest challenge in his 30 years of producing golf, is doing it from a production truck in the parking lot of the NBC Sports World Headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut. This is being produced out of a parking lot in Stamford, Connecticut with the world feed. Jim Story is the guy who runs that feed. It's a great feed, tons of technology, may not look very different, but the pacing will be different. It'll feel a little different. We have to cut some people some slack, and it's going to be really incumbent on those on-course reporters. John Wood was on a media call the other day, talked about how he might kind of put together a cheat sheet every day for the folks back in the U.S. to kind of know what he's seeing, what he was told by players, caddies, et cetera, from his experience caddying for Matt Kuchar and Hunter Mahan for so many years, to try to add to these telecasts. There are three cameras that are NBC's, plus they have a camera on 18 to make sure they can always show the 18th hole. So it's going to look different just in terms of the pacing. You may see some more players that you wouldn't normally see. But Tommy Roy is fully confident. The guys won 30 Emmys, that they will put together a telecast, especially on Saturday and Sunday, that'll be up there with everything else they do all year.
Before we get you to your picks, talking Open Championship with Jeremy Schilling, what about this course? Why is this course so unique?
Lots of humps and bumps and weird mounds and bounces. This is the Open that Ben Curtis won in 03. Darren Clark won in 2011. Lots of humps and bumps. The biggest defense this golf course has is its undulation. Soft right now. It is going to dry out. The weather forecast, which for the UK is always questionable, but for Sandwich, it is a dry forecast, a windy forecast, and if that happens, these golf courses drain exceptionally well. It's going to roll forever and ever and ever in a day. You're going to see that brown fescue hue come over your screen, and it's going to be one heck of a test in terms of balls bouncing to very weird places. Don't miss 18, for example, long. You can end up having to take a drop from the grandstands in some very high grass. 32,000 fans this week, by the way, on site, Luke. Wow. This is the largest gallery for any golf event since the return to golf at Colonial last June. It's going to be funky, and some are concerned about the rough height. Some are concerned about how close the fescue is to the fairway and the fact that it's not, you can do something with it rough. It is just hack it out back to the fairway rough. Well, mm-hmm. A lot of times, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe anybody's going to make birdies, and then you go out and somebody shoots 64, right? On Thursday, we talk about this at every major. I think that there may be some of this talk, but that is something to watch.
And lastly, before we let you go, who do you like this weekend? Who are your picks?
Man, you know, Justin Leonard talked about if Rory thinks that missing the cut at the Scottish Open last week is an advantage that he got there early, sure, but he likes the guys who played well there, including John Rahm. Gary Koch likes Ian Poulter. John Wood says no way to Bryson, but yes to Jordan Spieth. I agree with all of them. John Catlin is a really good long shot. He's at like 200-1 or 400-1, something way up there. Put a little bit of money on him. You get a huge return on your investment. He's a guy who got in late after one of those people withdrew. We see every Open Championship. Somebody who plays a lot in Europe, and as Ryan Ballinger, who was just on my podcast from the Golf News Net, just reminded me, he played in some bad weather over there, and when he won in Austria. So he has experience, and these guys tend to do funky things. But I really think this is Xander Schauffele's time to shine. This is a golf course and a golf tournament that fits his style of play. He's a grinder. He's a great putter. He's out of the arm lock putting style, which I'm very happy to see. Back to what he does best. I think this is Xander's week, Luke.
All right. We'll see. Open Championship this weekend. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill. Writes for the PGA Magazine and breaks down everything going on in the golf world with us every Wednesday. Jeremy, before we let you go, the most important question. Did you do the electric slide at either of the two weddings this past weekend? That's what everybody wants to know.
Did you talk to the person I was just talking to like 10 minutes ago?
No.
Because somebody, I was telling my mom's best friend that this family has a tradition at the second wedding to do the electric slide. And the rest of us are like, God, we have not heard this song in 20 years. And watch now, Joe's going to play me out playing the electric slide under me. But, yeah, and I stepped to the side and I said, no way. No, I do not remember this. And this family was so choreographed and so good at it.
Of course.
And in some weddings, you can, you know, kind of fake your way through it. I had no shot, Luke. None whatsoever. So I stepped to the side and just clapped.
Ah, well, that's good enough. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill. We'll talk next Wednesday, maybe do the electric slide together as well. Jeremy, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the Open Championship this weekend.
No, we will not be playing or doing the electric slide.
We'll get
on
Joe
this show.
In on the electric slide as well. We'll all do it together next week.
No, I'll do you a favor there, Jeremy. No, that's not going to happen.
We'll make it happen.
Oh, man. If there was only video for this show,
yeah,
Luke,
exactly.
There was only video. Yeah. Thank you, Luke, and I'll see you next week for the Scotch Tape Open, also known as the 3M Open.
Perfect. Can't wait. Appreciate it. Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill. How did I know? Because I've been to weddings, too. Every wedding has the electric slide. And you always have that group of people that they're very coordinated. Right? They do it, and they nail it perfectly. Good old electric slide. At least of a certain – I think the younger generation, they've done away with the electric slide. But if it's a little bit of an older crowd, you know they're bumping the electric slide at that wedding. And all the mothers are getting out there and doing the dance together in perfect
synchronicity.
Synchronicity. That's easier to say. In perfect synchronicity.
In sync.
Yeah, okay, that's an easier way. With perfect Justin Timberlake in sync timing. All right, coming up. Appreciate the time from Jeremy, as always. Team USA has the dream team to blame for their struggles. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Somebody's knocking. Should I let him in? Lord, it's the devil. Would you look at him? I've heard about him, but I never dreamed he'd have blue eyes and blue jeans. Well, somebody's talking.
Coming up, Team USA has the dream team to blame for their struggles so far this month. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling breaking down the final golf major of the year, the Open Championship, which begins tomorrow in the UK. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com, or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Download our free app today. You can find the show on demand there. Team USA got their first win of the year last night. They beat Argentina by 28 as they were supposed to. And I thought Greg Popovich said there are no blowouts. Right? Isn't that what he told us the other day? Teams don't get blown out. Oh, I don't know what last night was then. But Team USA started 0-2. We broke it down on the show yesterday. And I think Team USA has the dream team to blame. Not because the dream team is making this squad look bad with how dominant they were, but because the dream team made everyone else look better, at least in the years since. Larry Bird and Magic Johnson saved the NBA. Michael Jordan made it global, and in large part because of the dream team. It was that incredible roster with the best players the NBA had to offer. Kind of like what I was talking about last night with the All-Star game, where that is supposed to be the showcase, except it's not the biggest names in baseball actually participating, at least not this year. Well, in the case of the Dream Team, they were the biggest names. That was the best players in the league. It was who you wanted to show off for your league. And it was the first time that you could have that roster full of active NBA players, and boy, did they fill it up. And we've had documentaries made about it. And I mean, they were the Beatles. Wherever they went, out in the streets, even in the other country, they were getting mobbed. We saw it even in the Michael Jordan documentary last year. But it was the dream team led by Michael Jordan that turned basketball into an international sport. The NBA then became the first sport to play a game outside of this country, an actual game that counted. That was 1992, the dream team. That year, there were 23 foreign players in the NBA. 23. Now, in 2021, a quarter of the league is made up of international players who come from 41 different countries. There were 23 players total in the NBA from other countries in 1992. Now, 41 different countries are represented in 2021. The NBA set a record this year for most players from most countries. Right? To have players come from as many different countries as they do. And to also have the most international players in the league this year. That was also a record for the NBA. They have set a new record each of the last 5 years. They continue to have more and more international players come into the league. The sport, the game, it's now more global than ever before. And it continues to grow. The MVP this year was Nikola Jokic from Serbia. The runner-up was Joel Embiid from Cameroon. The last three MVPs have all been international players. The Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert from France. Giannis is dominating the NBA Finals. He's from Greece. Luka Doncic, one of the best young stars, Slovenia. In fact, four of the best players in the league, four of maybe the top 10, right? Jokic, Embiid, Giannis, Luka Doncic are not from this country. Then you have Ben Simmons from Australia, Pascal Siakam, also from Cameroon, all NBA players. And you go back and you look, Rudy Gobert was born in 1992, the year of the Dream Team. Giannis, Embiid, Siakam, they were born in 1994. Jokic in 1995, right at the beginning of this movement. As these countries start to get an interest in basketball, that's when these kids are growing up. 41 foreign players have been taken with a lottery pick the last 12 years in the NBA. In just the lottery portion of the draft alone, last 12 years, 41 international players have been lottery picks. And all but one of those 12 years, they had at least one international player in the lottery pick portion. So not only are they coming over to the NBA, they're some of the best players. Last year's draft gave us the highest number of drafted players from both France and Israel all time. Then you have the American-born players with ties to other countries that want to play for other teams in the Olympics. Right? For example, there are more than 30 American-born players in the NBA right now that have at least one parent from Africa. Victor Oladipo's parents are from Nigeria. Karl-Anthony Towns and Al Horford's families come from the Dominican Republic. Jordan Clarkson's family comes from the Philippines. Even Canada is producing more talent than ever before. Team USA was 54-2 under Coach K. And since Greg Popovich has taken over, they're now only 10-5. Dream Team, they made basketball cool for other countries. And also, there's no economic disparity, right? Like, hockey is an expensive sport. You have to pay for rink time, all the equipment. Lacrosse is considered an expensive sport. You have to have a team. You have to have enough guys. You can't just go out and play hockey on your own. You can't just go to a skating rink and skate around and flip a puck, right? You got a party going on, a birthday party. Kids are skating around. You have to actually be part of the team. You need other people. You need the money to get the equipment, to rent the rink time as a team. You have to pay for that. Practice at 6 a.m. It's tough. But basketball, I mean, hell, you could find a ball of yarn and a peach basket and work on your shot from anywhere in the world. Now, with all of that said, as the talent gets better elsewhere, we as a country should still win in basketball at the Olympics. Because you look at their starting five of Team USA, no, it's not the best starting five we could put together from the players in this country. But still, you're giving me Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, and Bam Adebayo. If that was a starting five in the NBA, they'd be the clear favorites to win the NBA Finals, let alone the Olympic gold. Right, because they're not going up against NBA teams right now. Sure, some of these countries have half of their roster made up of NBA players, but not the entire roster, like NBA teams do. And if you give me that starting five coached by Greg Popovich, we would expect them to win the NBA Finals and probably sweep their way there. 4-4-4, like Moses Malone. I probably wouldn't. They'd win 70 games and win the NBA Finals. And we thought the Brooklyn Nets, with their three stars, were going to go all the way with a first-time coach. You give me that starting five, just KD, Damian Lillard, Jason Tatum alone. With Greg Popovich coaching, that'd be the pick to win the NBA Finals. So they should win the gold. But why have things gotten tougher for them? Because all the other countries have gotten better. Why have they gotten better? Because of the Dream Team. It goes back to 1992, when Jordan and Stockton and company made basketball cool for all these other countries, made it possible. A lot of countries loosened their restrictions after that, allowing guys to even come here and play professional basketball. Tony Kukoc was one of the first afterwards. Then you got, you know, Vlade Divac. And now you have some of the best players in the sport. Those guys were good, but they were kind of average. Now, Giannis, Jokic, Doncic, some of the best players are coming from elsewhere, and I think it all ties back to the Dream Team. We'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 1 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow and ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with former Atlanta Brave Greg McMichael, who won a World Series with the Braves and now works for the organization. He'll join us in about 8 minutes at the top of next hour as we get ready for the second half of the baseball season now. I got a question before we go here at the top of the hour. Somebody, and this is just a great song, so it's very distracting to me. Love this song. Somebody stopped by this week. We have the Citadel Hall of Fame coming up. You know, every year, of course, is the Hall of Fame banquet. I'm the MC, and I'm happy to do it. I always enjoy it. It's a fun night. It'll be October this year, end of October. And congratulations to everybody who has been honored. And we will induct them. I say we because I'll be the MC. But everyone that will be inducted into the Hall of Fame come October for the Citadel. But my question is, I saw in the press release, it said the attire is smart casual. What is smart casual? Smart casual. I don't know what that is. Now, I'm going to wear a suit. I have to wear a suit anyway, so this doesn't affect me. But I have no idea what smart casual is. What is that dress code? I get that on an invitation. I don't know what I'm wearing because I'm not that smart. I'm very casual, but I'm not smart enough to figure it out.
Now, I know in the UK, smart is another way of saying looking sharp.
Oh, okay.
Looking smart.
I feel like that's contradicting the sharp casual. I'm going casual. I don't care to be sharp. I want to be casual. We'll catch up with Greg McMichael next. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.